I'm not even sure what his first name is. This was actually true. It's Celion. Now, question. Did you listen to anything he said in that meeting? Grayson raised an eyebrow. I searched for words. Normally, I was far more eloquent. Debate had been my favorite subject at school. I'd gone head-to-head with my articulate, overtly opinionated politician wannabe classmates at Columbia, sons of lawyers and daughters of judges. But just like any woman determined to be taken seriously, I had an Achilles heel. Being caught getting freaky with the boss and salivating all over him was going to make my career freefall like a shooting star. Let me help you with that, Grayson waved his hand. Mr. Laurent said they're slicing the budget of couture by at least 10%, which may not seem like much, but our blog is virtually running on fumes as it is. I thought this was the extent of it. I was wrong. I'm not sure I'm following, I frowned. Grayson leaned forward, catching my gaze. I'm going to ask again. How do you know the Laurents? Why? I felt my heart thudding against my chest. Now we were talking in plural? I just got this email. He turned his monitor around so the three of us could huddle in front of it and take a look. From Matthias Laurent, President, LBC, to Grayson Covey, Editor, Couture Online Magazine. Dear Mr. Covey, as per our earlier discussion and in line with the recent cuts made at Couture, we shall be needing further assistance in the news department. We will be transferring one of your employees to the newsroom starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. Seeing as you and Miss Jones have worked together closely for the past 2 years, the person reporting to the newsroom will be Miss Humphrey. Regards, M. Laurent, President, LBC. What's going on? I swiveled Grayson's chair, grabbing his shoulders. I was mildly elated and a whole lot frightened. Working in a newsroom had been my dream for as long as I could remember, but working under Celion was sure to be a nightmare. My feelings were at war, fighting and tugging between joy and abject horror. I have no idea. Mr. Laurent Sr. has never addressed me in person. I wasn't even sure he knew my name. Grayson rubbed his forehead, looking disoriented. You think it's got something to do with Celion? Ava asked. Celion was about as readable as a blank sheet. He was a mystery wrapped in an enigma. He'd seemed pissed at me, sure, and he'd been clear he didn't want to see me again. Doubt it. As I said before, we don't know each other, I parroted myself. Grayson darted up to rub my back. It's okay. You'll be fine. Celion made a name for himself as the cruelest man in the business, which is why we've actually been leaving CNN and Fox News to eat dust the last couple years. But at the end of the day, there will be people around. He can't maim you. A ping sounded from Grayson's computer, and our eyes shot back to the screen. From Celion Laurent, News Director, LBC. To Grayson Covey, Editor, Couture Online Magazine. Gary, you were expected to send us the Swedish royal wedding piece 2 hours ago. Unless you're fond of long unemployment lines and downgrading to a Bronx apartment with unreliable electricity, I would advise against testing my limit when it comes to punctuality. They're called deadlines for a reason. If you fail to deliver the piece on time, Celion. Grayson double-clicked the little X on the right-hand corner of his monitor, closing the email program. About the maiming thing? He cleared his throat, looking skyward and shaking his head. Wear a helmet tomorrow morning, just in case.
Chapter 2. Celion.
Good morning, Mr. Laurent. Here's your Grande Americano daily schedule and the news bulletins for today. You have a 10 o'clock meeting with your father in his office and a noon lunch with James Townley and his agent regarding renewing his contract. Your dry cleaner left a message that your navy blue Gucci pea coat is missing. They sent their apologies and offered a 20% discount off your next visit. What would you like me to do with this information, sir?
Bunch a lawsuit into a ball and shove it down their throats. Overall, my PA, Brianna Shaw, was an okay kid. A law school grad who I was pretty sure still thought pro bono referred to being a U2 fan, she did make an effort. Something that couldn't be said about the pile of self-entitled snotty millennials who'd come in and out of this place trying, and failing, to assist me. Brianna wheezed like she was in the middle of an orgy when she talked to me, which made understanding her a struggle. Maybe it had something to do with the fact that she had to chase me up and down the hall. She was short and stocky, and I was tall and ran 7 miles a day. I bookmarked the idea of hiring a tall, athletic, married assistant the minute Brianna threw in the towel, which, judging by my track record, should be any week now. My assistants usually quit at the 2 to 3 month mark, right around the time either of these grave realizations hit them. 1. I was an insufferable asshole. 2. I was not going to fuck them. Brianna now hovered near the 4 month threshold, a trooper if I ever saw one, or one masochistic lunatic. Fire them, I snapped. I don't work with thieves. Unless they have an ass worthy of every rap song I've ever heard. Judith Humphrey assaulted my mind. Then I let them keep their job. Though that was bullshit and I knew it, Miss Humphrey didn't work for me. Chances were I wouldn't see her for months on end. She worked on a different floor in a different department. At any rate, I never screwed the same woman twice, and I would never touch an employee. She was officially as toxic as poison ivy, and after stealing from me, just about as tempting. Brianna licked her lips, pushing her dull brown curls behind her ears as she huddled beside me. I was dashing from the newsroom into my office.
Sir, that would be a challenge, seeing as, according to this spreadsheet...
She swiped the iPad screen in her hand.
You have officially blacklisted every single dry cleaner in Manhattan.
I pried the device from her fingers, my eyes skimming the lines of red-stricken shops. Unfucking believable. Human nature was designed to take what it wanted, consequences be damned. Again, I thought of little Miss Humphrey. She had no business barging into my thoughts. I usually forgot my one-night stands before the cum on my cock dried up. Then again, she had stolen from me. And I took something of hers. The Smiths, Block Party, the Kinks, Baby Shambles, Dirty Pretty Things. The girl knew her way around a record shop. Fire them, I repeated.
But, sir...
Brianna gasped, a rather dramatic response for the occasion. I stopped in front of my office door. She did the same. Her face was so red I thought she was going to spontaneously combust. I hope she wasn't. I had a new Brioni dress shirt and apparently no honest dry cleaners within the city limits.
You have no other option unless you want to go back to one of the dry cleaners you've previously blacklisted, she explained.
False. There's a third option.
There is?
She batted her eyelashes. Not many of my female employees had the balls to do that. First, because I was the president's son. Second, because I was just a tad more intimidating than Lucifer himself. And third, because I was, as my associate producer Kate labeled me once, devastatingly unavailable. Which essentially meant I wasn't distracted by a perky set of tits. You can be there to monitor them while they work on my items.
But
you're right. Can is a casual word. It is what's going to happen.
Sir,
clock starts now. Better run. They get busy around noon. I tapped my Rolex, storming into my office and shutting the door with a thud. An hour later, my lousy excuse for a father wandered into my office like a tourist in a gift store wondering what the fuck he'd like to break. Technically, I was supposed to meet him in his office. But if we were talking technicalities, he was supposed to act like a dad and not a skirt-chasing, social-climbing douchebag. So I called us even. He leaned his shoulder against the doorframe, his hands tucked inside his pockets.
Je n'aime pas que l'on me fasse attendre.
I don't like to be kept waiting. Hard to believe this asshole was the president of an American broadcasting news channel. He still insisted on speaking French to anyone who would listen. My mother had stopped being one of those people a year ago, when my sister died. She'd promptly divorced him. Moved to Florida, and found a new boy toy to play with. I visited her every few weekends to get away from the bullshit and nagging loneliness. Bonus points, Floridian pussy was tanner and not half as uptight as the New York variety. And it was so much easier to pull the tourist thing without people realizing I was a Laurent. The Laurents, Maman's family... Matthias took her last name as a part of a draconian prenup. We're royals in the upper-class crust of Manhattan. We kept our shit secretive and tight-lipped, and we were almost as scrutinized as the people we reported on. Chances are you'll live. I said in English, still typing on my laptop, unfortunately.
Look at me when I'm talking to you, he barked.
I did. I could tell my compliance startled him, because the great Mathias Laurent cleared his throat, walked over to the seat in front of mine, and collapsed into it like he'd been holding his breath for the past year, which was pretty much what we'd all done since Camille died.
We're having an identity problem that causes ad space to tank.
He slapped the chrome desk between us. Let's agree to disagree. I know exactly who I am. A newsman who's grossed the highest network ratings every night for the past 2 years and the son of a philandering idiot. If you suffer from memory loss, I'd suggest ginkgo biloba, B12 vitamins, and fatty acids. I kept my eyes on the screen.
Listen, son.
He crossed his legs and I did my best not to laugh.
Really? Son, that was rich. Your work here is appreciated, but it's time to play nice with new advertisers and harvest fresh revenues.
You mean now it's time to let parties propaganda and every dick with an alcohol bottle or cigarette brand sell have airtime? I sat back and laced my fingers together. Because we already have commercials coming out of our asses. We just don't run the spots that bring in the big bucks, because people tend to lose their trust in a news channel who tells them they should buy a pack of condoms and lubricants to go with their booze. He rolled his eyes like a teenager.
Il n'est pire sol que celui qui ne veut pas entendre.
No one is as deaf as the one who refuses to listen.
Perhaps a few simple endorsements on air will do. I'm meeting you halfway here, Celia.
I'd rather meet you in court when I sue your ass for shitting over my soon-to-be network. I stopped him mid-speech. This news channel will report the news. Nothing more, nothing less. It is the sales department's job to find lucrative deals.
Précisément. They simply can't. You've made this network the goody-two-shoes of TV. We're never biased, never wrong, and never profitable. And that's an issue.
Don't give me the profitable bullshit. I watch the numbers closely. I'm about to inherit this place. We were making clean profits, just not major revenues like we could if we sold our soul to the devil. I preferred my soul intact. It was bad enough I didn't have a heart.
Continue this line of behavior, and you will inherit nothing.
My father reddened, his face swollen with blood and anger. I smiled impatiently. It's not up to you, and you know it. My mother gave you the keys to this ride, and you shall return them when you're no longer fit for the job. The difference between us is that I am a newsman, and you are a lucky bastard.
Watch your tone with me.
He punched his thigh, his face so red it was starting to look purple. I knew I should back down before he suffered another heart attack. I hated my father with a fiery passion, but I didn't want his death on my conscience. I knotted my fingers together, leaning forward and meeting his gaze. Nature must have known what I'd found out when I wasn't even 10. We weren't going to be close. I'm certain that's why I looked so much like my mother. Light eyes, dark hair. Only things I'd inherited from Mathias were his height and ability to make people want to commit murder. I pride myself in bringing to the table impartial, factual, bulletproof information, in having a proven track record of clean kills every night. What our viewers do with this information is up to them. You will not inject any pro-Republican, pro-Democrat, or pro-bullshit propaganda into my news show. You will not air ads for casinos, alcohol, or condoms. You will not ruin this business for me.
We need to stay profitable, Celia.
My father adjusted his silky red tie.
And when it comes to thinking for yourself, at least have the decency to sound a little less adamant. Your track record hasn't exactly proven that you do as you preach.
I knew exactly what he was referring to, and I wanted to staple his face to my goddamn door for the hypocrisy. He dug the hole I was sitting in with his own dick, and now he was shoveling mud to bury me inside of it.
If you don't want me to touch your show, I will have to cut back on your staff. I will make the necessary arrangements to let go of the interns and standby reporters.
Fucker. But it beat drowning in ads for casinos and experimental drugs.
You do what you have to do, I hissed.
Any more words of wisdom from a man who doesn't know where our studio actually is?
We should rid ourselves of James Townley if he makes any further salary demands.
My father flattened his hand over my desk. For a reason beyond my grasp, my father fucking hated our anchor of the last 35 years. James Townley had come to this station when he was 24 years old, and over the years, he'd miraculously received everything he'd ever asked for, including but not limited to setting up his son, Phoenix, with a job here. Said son stirred up so much trouble on this floor, my father'd had to strategically remove him to the other side of the world. He was now on the Syrian-Israeli border, reporting on all things Middle East. It was my educated assumption that ISIS would sponsor the next Pride Parade in Damascus before trying to kidnap Phoenix Townley. Yet James was still pissy about Matias putting his son's life in danger. Townley was a lovable prick, and he was well-spoken, well-respected, and well-received. He also looked like Harrison Ford's fake-tanned, bleach-haired twin brother, which didn't exactly hurt our ratings. If he and my father could have killed each other without legal consequences, I'd have two less headaches to worry about. Are you done? I sat back and rolled a pen between my fingers. I was going to have a double serving of this nonsense in about 2 hours when I met James and his agent for lunch.
Almost. I added a little something special to your team I believe you're going to appreciate.
My father raised his hand to the glass wall, and my eyes followed the direction to the fishbowl newsroom. Judith Humphrey. She stood there, statuesque and holding a cardboard box to her chest, refusing to look petrified. With her sun-kissed hair and a dusting of freckles covering her button-like nose, she was the type of beautiful that suddenly sneaks up on you. The more you looked at her, the more you realized how striking she was. She looked like she belonged on a beach, running barefoot. Even in her size too big potato sack dress, she looked like freedom and tasted like a piece of the sky. I wanted to grab her and slam her over the desk, fucking her three ways to Sunday in front of my entire news crew. Problem was, Judith also had a mouth, and it talked back. Always. It annoyed and delighted me in equal measure. Part of me wanted to screw her, the other to spank her. Those two didn't necessarily contradict one another, but I wasn't the type of asshole to sleep with an employee. My father, however, didn't seem to share my moral standards, or any morals for that matter. We'll make do without her, I snapped. Even after the intern cut.
She'll make for pretty decoration in the newsroom.
He ignored me, sitting back and eyeing her. My father had an office over 50 floors up, on the 60th floor. However, he was here a lot, and he couldn't exactly fire his own secretary and replace her with Judith, mainly because he already had a reputation. She's not a vase. I refused to spare her another look. My dad shrugged.
Both have holes.
My eyelid ticked. Your face can have one too if you don't shut the hell up. I gathered the paperwork for the morning's rundown and stood up. Out of curiosity, are you moving her here because you want to fuck her or because you think I will? He'd obviously filled in the gaps yesterday when we'd made the Keturah announcement. Matthias threw his hands sideways with a smile.
Why not both? This could go in so many interesting directions.
No, it won't. You won't touch her, and neither will I.
Because?
My father still hadn't received the memo that he was well into his 60s, and that the only reason young women weren't slapping him into unconsciousness was because he had more money than he could spend in 6 lifetimes, and a name that was synonymous with power.
Because she's an employee.
He raised an eyebrow, silently reminding me that when he set his eyes on a woman, he liked her small, dependent, and very much unemployed. If it was up to him, he would saunter over to Judith right now and whisk her to the same suite we'd shared at the Laurent Towers Hotel next door. If she proved to be good in the sack, which she would, I knew that, because I'd been balls deep in her not even a month ago. He would lock her in a golden cage and provide her with a luxurious life of imprisonment. An apartment, a private driver, a credit card with an outrageous cap, all to keep her happy and available until he got bored with her. I pointed the stack of documents in his face. Move her ass back to the 5th floor before the end of the day.
He smirked. May I remind you who is the boss around here?
I pushed my door open, throwing him a glare soaked with repulsion. The boss is the asshole who makes your show worth something, Father. You're just a fucking purse. I ended up ignoring Judith for the rest of the day. It wasn't intentional, but satisfactory all the same. I didn't even bother to show her to her desk. I wasn't entirely sure what my father wanted her to do here, but I knew after the face-off this morning I'd better keep her, or he'd find another way to sabotage my show. She was probably a wannabe fashionista who thought working at couture was an honor akin to receiving the Nobel Prize. I needed to get creative with giving her a task she could perform well that would still put some distance between us. After lunching with James and his agent, I had to do a final rundown before the show. James was having a meltdown two floors below because the makeup artist didn't have his shade of foundation, and he was afraid he'd look like an Oompa Loompa, and an interviewee had been involved in a car accident on his way to the show. Since Judith didn't have a desk, a computer, or anyone to talk to, she sat on a chair by the door and wrote furiously in a thick notebook. I imagined her diary to be filled with her latest thoughts about Shawn Mendes and anal bleaching. By the time I had a minute to spare, it was 7:30. Everyone had already left for the day. I grabbed a chair and plopped down next to her, folding my arms over my chest. She looked up from her notebook, uncrossing her legs and tucking her chucked feet under her chair. She looked like a newswoman, like I looked like a fucking clown. The mere acknowledgement of her existence here was spit in my precious time's face. "This wasn't my idea," I clarified, rubbing my face tiredly. She broke into a smile, not fake, not calculated, and also not constructive to my twitching dick.
"Good show."
"I know.
But I thought your interview with Faceworld CEO could have gone differently."
"Next time I'll make sure he wears Hermes when he talks about the Russian hacker threats."
"Or maybe next time make sure he's not blowing smoke up your anchor's ass. Excuse my French."
If nothing else, her dig was kind of funny.
"Seeing as your main competition ran a story tonight about how said CEO is now accused of being an avid user of Cotton Whey, a darknet website where you can buy heroin and guns for competitive prices."
She handed me her phone. It was the main item on their website now. "Fuck. This place look like TMZ to you?" I motioned around the room with my finger.
"There's nothing sleazy about this item, and you know it. I came here to make the news, to keep the masses informed, and to serve my country."
She surprised me, her eyes shooting daggers at mine. Why did her words surprise me? Because she was gorgeous and young and fuckable to a fault. But didn't that make me the misogynistic, judgmental bastard my father was? "Your station." I stood up and cleared my throat, sauntering to the middle of the room. I'd deliberately put her somewhere I couldn't see clearly from my office. I knew my dick better than to trust it around Miss Chucks. "See this?" She slid into the chair in front of the monitor.
"Reuters."
We have a genius on our hands. "Your job is to stare at this screen all day and sort through the relevant news items on this site. Yellow items go to Steve, our junior reporter. Well, slightly less junior than you. Orange items go to Jessica, our in-house reporter, and red items go straight to Kate, my associate producer." I scribbled their emails on a post-it note and slapped it on her monitor.
"And what happens when I see a yellow with the potential to become a red?"
"Your yellow hair would look nice on my thighs as you suck me off and I make your ass red, with the spanking you clearly deserve." "Fat chance." I straightened up so I wouldn't have to smell her vanilla and warm ginger scent. My dick didn't need this kind of negativity in his life.
"It could, though."
I turned around, facing her again. "And what are your credentials to make such assumptions?" She stared at me flippantly.
"BA from Columbia Journalism School."
"Fuck hot, Smith's enthusiast, well-educated, and a lying thief." I needed to stay away from her, send her ass packing, and relocate her to our Chicago branch. For now, though, I was mainly interested in why a Columbia graduate had stolen my goddamn change in condoms.
"Before you ask, full scholarship. I have no money."
She was a mind reader, too. I stroked my chin. "Didn't ask, don't care. You'll also be my assistant's assistant."
"Your assistant has an assistant?"
She swiveled in her chair, eyes widening. "She does now," I smirked.
"You disgust me,"
she said. "You have a weird way of showing it."
"Weren't you the one who gave me a 20-minute lecture about never mentioning that night again?"
She darted up and stomped her foot, her hands balled into fists. I would pity her if I didn't remember how I'd felt when I'd realized my wallet was missing. She actually thought we were playing by the same rules. We were toe-to-toe now, and even though the room was empty save for her and me, I could feel it burning up with our anger. I liked her hot and bothered, but that didn't mean I was going to dip my dick into her again. I didn't break my rules for anyone, let alone an employee. That didn't interfere with the fact that my balls tightened, though. My muscles tensed, too, with the frustration of not being able to remind her that she might hate me outside of bed, but inside it she'd been purring like a kitten. Judith, I clasped her chin between my fingers, angling her face to meet my gaze.
Jude,
she corrected. She wanted me to be like everyone else. That ship had fucking sailed the minute I'd spotted her in the bar, and all I could see were her pink chuck-clad feet wrapped around my shoulders as I drilled into her. Let me be clear about one thing. My title may be news director, but sometime in the next 5 years, I will be the president of this company. Better yet, I will be the owner of every single floor in this 60-story building, top to bottom, staplers and coffee machines included. The rules do not apply to me. You have laws, but I operate in my own little dictatorship. As long as it's legal and does not cross the employer-employee relationship, I can say whatever I fucking want to you. Since I have a rich legal background, Harvard Law, in case you were wondering, I know where the line is drawn, and I intend to walk it like a tightrope if you cross me. Her breath caught in her throat, a caged, helpless animal, and my eyes focused on her big russet hazels, knowing that if they drifted downward to her cleavage, I was liable to rip her clothes off and fuck her against the desk.
Ambition,
she whispered, running her hand along my dress shirt.
What? I wore the black chucks because black represents ambition, motivation. I want to work here. I want to prove myself. I have a lot to offer in and out of the newsroom.
What the fuck was she doing? Touching me in the office. She wasn't exactly trying to seduce me, but she wasn't not trying to either. Turned out two could walk that tightrope.
You're playing with fire, I warned.
Her hand crawled up, touching my mouth, her thumb hovering over my lower lip, tracing the seams, reminding me of 3 weeks ago.
Maybe I want to get burned.
I grabbed her wrist and lowered her hand as gently as I possibly could without pressing it against my raging hard-on. I don't shit where I eat.
Give yourself some credit.
She licked her rosebud lips.
You weren't that bad.
I chuckled, shaking my head. Say what you want about this girl, she had balls the size of watermelons. You can join my ship. I grabbed my new wallet and phone, tucking them in my back pocket. As long as you realize I'm your captain, and that there will be no more fucking around, literally or figuratively. Instead of giving her the pleasure of formulating a response, I turned around and walked away, muttering under my breath, "Just don't expect me to help you when you drown."
Chapter 3. Jude. Things got progressively and methodically worse in the week following my move, Grayson, deportation, from Couture to the newsroom. The place was a zoo made out of silver chrome desks glued together in a wave pattern, circling huge monitors that broadcast different news channels from all over the world. The newsroom was round with glass walls. Nearby was another conference room, made of glass as well, in which fresh pastries and fruit sat in fancy baskets, and elegant glass water bottles were lined together neatly. There were hundreds of monitors, switchboard phones, keyboards, and cables, running from side to side. There was a stairway to the 7th floor that led to a door with a plaque plastered on it. Magic happens here. This referred to the actual studio where the primetime news show was recorded. But I couldn't feel the fairy dust on my skin because I was too busy trying to survive my life as I knew it. Milton was the first to kill my mojo. My cheating ex had decided that the fact he'd been boning his editor was not, in fact, grounds for a breakup. First came the flowers and text messages. When those were ignored, or given to the lonely, attractive neighbor upstairs, the flowers, of course. 40-something-year-old widow Mrs. Hawthorne didn't need to read the douche canoe's apologies for dipping his sausage into a different ketchup tub first thing after coming back from a grueling shift as a nurse. Milton started asking our mutual friends to be mediators. Said friends, who were neck-deep in kissing his ass for landing a job at a prestigious magazine, explained that Milton was the one, My one. That we had something special going on, and it would be insane to throw it away because of one mistake. He was going to help you pay your debt, one of our friends, Joe, even added. Consider that, too. I told Joe and the others that if they were going to plead the case of a cheater who decided to throw our 5 years down the drain, they might as well delete my number. I was in an anxiety-filled headspace, consisting of a sick father, a new job, and a stack of bills that remained impressive even in my employed state. Acting diplomatically was not high on my list of priorities. Then there was work. Céline Laurent was the biggest jerk to ever walk on planet Earth, and he carried that title like a badge of honor. The only silver lining was that I now knew it wasn't personal. He was just a dick who did a phenomenal job making news and surpassed every single talented newsman I'd ever learned from, but a dick nonetheless. And speaking of penises, contrary to my impression from our last encounter, he'd kept his tucked firmly inside his slacks all throughout the week. Not that we had any chance of working one-on-one in a busy newsroom, but when he did acknowledge my existence, albeit reluctantly, he remained cold, aloof, and professional. And me? I tried to forget the moment of weakness during which I'd touched him. I didn't know why I was looking for a connection with him. Maybe I recognized how similar we were. He was bitter, and I was angry. He wanted casual, and I didn't think I could afford anything else with everything that went on in my life. But I couldn't forget how it felt when he touched me, when his mouth was on mine, when his hands pinned me to the wall, when he made me forget about my sick father piling bills and unemployment. True to his word, Celian put me in charge of Reuters. The only qualification I needed for the job was the ability to distinguish between yellow, orange, and red. Most reporters, even junior ones like me, had plenty of tasks. I had just the one, to rot in front of the monitor. Oh, and help his assistant, Brianna Shaw. Celian's PA was the definition of candy sweet. Unfortunately, she was also a ticking time bomb. Celian was such a tyrant, she spent the majority of the day running after him, taking orders, or sobbing softly in the restroom. Today was the third time I'd found her doing that. On a Friday, of all days, a second before everyone in New York poured into fancy bars and hole-in-the-wall pubs to celebrate the weekend freedom, and I silently slid a box of tissues and a mini bottle of whiskey into her stall. She'd been too scared to ask for my help, and I didn't know how to broach the subject without making her feel weak. But that third time in the restroom broke me. To hell with my boss and his deep blue eyes, his pouty lips, dirty mouth, and Zac Efron body. Hey, I squatted down, my butt hovering over the floor. My chucks were gray today, moody and depressed. You need a break. And a drink. Let me help you. I have plenty of free time. And I did. My job was as challenging as tying one's shoes. Brianna hiccuped from the other side of the stall, unscrewing the bottle and taking a sip. She started. I strained my ears to listen. He needs to have his suits cleaned. I'll drop them off in half an hour. Just give me their address, I said. No. He demands that you stay at the dry cleaners and watch them clean his clothes. What? You mean make sure to take the receipt? Maybe he had a favorite person cleaning his clothes. What a diva. Rich people had ridiculous whims. In Celian's case, he was picky about who cleaned his suits, but was perfectly content with eating a stranger's ass. Brianna hiccuped again. No, I mean, he makes me sit there and look at them as they do it. Why? I gasped. Because they sometimes steal his clothes. Why are you still working here? I would have stabbed him in the face through the power of telepathy by now had he done that to me.
Because he's smart, pays well, and, I mean,
she downed the entire drink. I heard her gulping it.
He's seriously handsome, but of course I know he'd never look at me. He once said my legs are awfully short because I need to run to catch up with his pace. He probably thinks I look like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
I'd had enough. Enough of him treating Brianna like a pest. Enough of him allowing everyone else in the newsroom to overlook me.
I hadn't been introduced to one person. The associate producer, Kate, asked me once where my parents were. Enough of sneaking to the fifth floor every lunch break to spend time with Grayson and Ava, because Sirion invited everyone in the newsroom to the conference room to eat lunch every day. Every one but me. I darted out of the restroom. My eyes found him like that's what they'd been trained to do. He was in his office, the door thrown open, typing away and ignoring the hustle and bustle in the hallway. I knocked on his door loudly, my anger climbing up my throat and bawling into a scream. I walked in without permission.
"Yes," he said without looking up.
"I need to talk to you." I was surprised at how heated and cross my voice sounded, like liquid lava slithering between my lips.
"I beg to fucking differ. You're reporting to Steve, Jessica, and Kate, in that order. Think of this place as a church, Judith. When you make a confession, you go to a priest. You don't have a direct line to God."
Did he just... Surely he didn't. "Did you just compare yourself to God?" I tried to wrap my head around this. But of course he did. He had his PA monitoring his dry cleaners. The guy was obviously more bananas than a tropical island. And he was still typing away and staring at the screen. I slammed the door behind me to get his attention. Finally, he looked up. I swallowed the saliva pooling in my mouth. His crisp white dress shirt rolled up his elbows, his tan and muscular forearms with the veins sneaking down to his big hands, and the carved, severe expression on his face, so sharp it could nick and make me bleed to death with a glare alone. "You're making Brianna sit at your dry cleaners for hours on end and watch them clean your clothes?" I seethed. A toxic grin spread over his face.
"I'm guessing by your reaction that you inherited the vexing task."
"A task I will not do."
"A task you will do unless you want to get fired, gray or not."
"Huh?" I seethed. His eyes dropped to my chucks. He noticed.
"Just because you're in a shitty mood doesn't mean you get to boss your boss around. Learn your place, Chucks."
"Chucks?" His eyes traveled down to my feet, and he raised one lonely eyebrow.
"Whatever." I stomped my foot, seething.
"You're being unreasonable. You need to stop walking so fast, too. Brianna is running after you, and her feet are all banged up."
"Miss Humphrey, hell will freeze over before you dictate my movements, in or out of my newsroom."
I threw my hands up. "I give up. Please transfer me back to Couture. Making news was my life's ambition, but self-fulfillment is not worth working with you." What was I saying? Why was I saying that? I didn't want to go back to Couture. I loved Ava and Gray, but I wanted to stay here and make news. I just wanted him not to treat me like I didn't exist and cut Brianna some slack.
"You like the news? Here's a newsflash for you. You don't always get what you want. Are we done here?"
No, we were definitely not done. But I couldn't jeopardize my job, so I turned around and was about to storm straight to Grayson's office when I crashed into something hard. I looked up. It was Matthias Laurent, and he was smiling back at me like a cunning cat who'd just eaten a canary, a few yellow feathers still sticking out of his mouth.
"Hello,"
he said, in the same French accent Celian had faked the other day. Unease slinked down my spine. "Sir," I nodded, making way for him to enter his son's office. In my periphery, I caught Celian perking up, drinking the two of us in.
"Matthias Laurent. Please call me Matt."
He offered his hand. I shook it. Well, at least Laurent Sr. wasn't a douchebag. I gave him my name, and he took a step toward me, still at the threshold.
"We didn't get to properly meet last week, Miss Humphrey, but I always try my best to get to know everyone in the LBC family, no matter the position."
"Could have sworn horizontal is your favorite position,"
Celian snapped, standing up and grabbing his jacket from the back of his chair. Matthias continued, ignoring him.
"I would love to have you come to my office to discuss what you are seeing and experiencing in my newsroom. Monday at 10?
I smiled, opening my mouth to accept the invitation, when Celian's hand locked around my wrist and dragged me out of his office and down the hallway. I stumbled over my own feet. What the hell was his problem? I must have uttered the question out loud because he let out a frustrated growl, more fitting for felines in the wild. He pushed open a door leading to a dim, empty room I'd never been in before and slammed it behind us. The power room. I grunted as my back hit rough buttons and cold metal. Cillian was pressed so close I could feel his hot male presence squeezing the lust out of me, which made a very different groan escape my lips. He took a step back, as if my touch was lethal.
Stay away from him.
His voice was so low and menacing I felt it in my stomach. I grinned, swiping my tongue across my bottom lip and staring at him through hooded eyes. I think I just talked to the real God around here, and Jesus got pissed. Inwardly, I could hear Jesus rumbling. Yep, she's throwing me under the bus again. I made a mental note to visit my local church on Sunday.
I'm not in the business of repeating myself,
he seethed, ignoring my jab. And if I knew one thing about Cillian, it was that he never passed an opportunity to outwit you once you threw a jab at him.
And I don't want you near him. His intentions aren't pure.
And yours are? I huffed. Look, I can't and won't ignore my boss, my real boss, the man who pays my salary. He bent down to bite my ear.
I'm the man who fucked you senseless, and you can't stop thinking about. I'm the asshole you masturbate to in order to get off. I'm the guy who will destroy my competition, especially when it comes to Matthias Laurent. So, do yourself a favor and keep your pussy, my pussy, as far away from him as possible. Compris?
His tight chest and hard abs against my soft body. His tall, commanding figure enveloping my small one into submission. He was touching me without really touching me, and I wanted him to swallow me whole like a Venus flytrap, clamp his jaw, and absorb every inch of me. Touch me, fill me, drown me in your poisonous kisses, let me die from your venom buried under your sinful skin. I hate you.
Would you like to test that theory?
He chuckled, forever standoffish, even when it felt like thunder cracked between us in the dark room. I should have said no, but something else slid from my mouth breathlessly. Yeah, fact-checking is your craft, isn't it? Without looking back, he reached behind him, locking us in. My heart pitter-pattered into submission, no longer lonely and resentful. Cillian grabbed my jaw and crashed our lips together in an animalistic kiss that somehow started from the middle. With tongues battling, fingers unbuttoning clothes, and hands roaming, searching, squeezing, and twisting every inch of flesh and fabric. I was out of breath before my dress hit the floor, and out of my mind the minute his cock pressed against my stomach. Haven't had the chance to read the employee manual of LBC yet. Is this an official part of our one-on-one meetings? I laughed, my heart threatening to burst out of my skin and fall at his Italian loafered feet.
Am I doing anything you don't want me to do?
You're doing less than what I want you to do, I admitted.
Then no talking, Humphrey. I like you better that way.
Still hate you, I mumbled into his mouth, clawing at his shirt. He was dressed, so very dressed, and I'd never wanted anyone more naked in my life.
Still don't care,
he hissed, and hoisted me up against the door, slamming his groin into mine. Condom, I ordered. No matter how sexy Cillian was, he still gave me the vibe of someone who'd been around the block. And this was Manhattan, so there were plenty of dubious blocks to choose from.
Fuck.
He bit down on my lip punishingly, pulling away from me, plastering his forehead against mine and rolling it from side to side.
I'm clean.
I don't care.
Surely you're on the pill.
His cock dug between my legs, and it was hard to deny him anything. Decapitating me included. We're not at a point in our relationship where we're having this conversation. I want you to get me off, not get me pregnant. I need to forget. Forget that my life is a mess, that my dad is dying, that I'm drowning in bills. But of course he didn't ask, didn't care. He looked down at me. For a second something passed between us. Despite his perpetually cold exterior, he seemed to understand loss and disappointment. In a fundamental way that tainted your entire perception of life. He spun me around and slapped my bare knees like a scolding headmaster. It wasn't the burn, but the shock that made me fall down on all fours. I was blinking away the surprise when I felt him lower to his knees behind me. His mouth found my hot center from behind, and he licked me slowly, making my thighs quiver with pleasure. The sweet, almost seductive licks became strokes. He parted my butt cheeks with his strong hands, plunging his tongue between my folds, thrashing against my walls. My moans were becoming increasingly loud, and he threw a piece of fabric at me.
Bite.
I sunk my teeth into the cloth as his fingers dented my thighs red and blue. The orgasm ripped through me like a bucket of hot water. It washed over my body, sudden and violent. I bit so hard into the fabric I thought I was going to rip it apart. I collapsed to the floor, but Celion didn't give me time to recover. He flipped me over expertly and climbed atop me, naked from the waist down, but still wearing his shirt. I didn't know when that happened, but I was starting to come to terms with the fact that I acted very drunk and very stupid every time he and his mouth entered my general vicinity. I thought he was going to poke his engorged penis between my legs and was about to protest, but he surprised me by scooting farther up until his ass was aligned with my chest. He plucked the fabric from my mouth and threw it on the floor, guiding his cock into my mouth with his palm.
Still gonna fuck you today. Just not the hole I was aiming for.
Wait. I snaked my hand between us, squeezing his girth. Even though he was a control freak, his eyelids slid shut, and he let me stroke him back and forth. If you want me to suck you off, you need to drop the whole dry cleaning thing. Be in charge of your own dry cleaning. Give them the clothes yourself, and while you're at it, make an official complaint. That way they'll think twice before stealing, because the suit has a face. Agreed? He threw his head back and laughed.
Disagreed. Fuck that.
Apparently so, because it's not me you'll be screwing. That sobered him up quickly. I wiggled underneath him, pretending to move away, and he sank more weight against me, pressing a playful palm to the base of my neck.
Are you blackmailing me, Miss Humphrey?
I clasped his penis harder, pressing my thumb against the pearl of pre-cum gathering at his tip, bringing it to my lips and tasting it with a sweet smile. If he was expecting an actual answer with words, he underestimated me. Actions spoke louder. And right now, I had him by the balls, almost literally. His nostrils flared and his mouth pursed into a scowl.
This better be one hell of a BJ.
With that, he grabbed the back of my head and pushed himself all the way into my mouth until I could feel his tip at the back of my throat. I wanted to gag, but that involved showing him vulnerability, and I had managed to go without it so far. So I took it all in and even let out a sigh of pleasure. His balls tightened against my chin, and I felt myself dripping on the floor, my thighs spreading involuntarily. He began to thrust into my mouth, and I sucked hungrily, loving his taste. My hand snaked behind him, and I began to play with myself as I sucked him off. He took a hold of my hair, elevated his ass for a better angle, and thrust harder, slapping my hand away.
My turn.
But I couldn't help it. The need to get off prickled between my legs. Plus, I was certain I was going to regret every moment, so I might as well leave this room thoroughly orgasmed. I arched my back, trying to grind against the air and whimpering in frustration around his cock.
Coming,
he announced, not even asking if it was okay to do what he was about to. Warm, thick liquid swam in my mouth a second later. I swallowed it before it managed to hit my taste buds, holding my breath, as I used to do every time I was on the giving end of oral sex with Milton. Celion pushed off me onto his shins, still holding my hair in his fist. He looked as pissed as he had walking into this place, not even mildly affected by what we'd just done. I cupped my mouth, realizing a thin river of cum was sliding from the corner of my lips. What have I done? I whispered. Reality came crashing in on me. I'd done it again, only this time it was 1,000 times worse, because now I knew he was my superior. He wasn't a confident and assertive tourist, he was actually a raging American asshole.
Your boss, it seems, he said with his signature jaded tone, standing up and buckling his slacks.
He balled my dress and threw it into my arms. It was wet and wrinkled to death.
Can't really fuck your boss and his father, can you? Guess I made the decision for you. Why the hell did he think I'd sleep with Matthias?
Also, I'd advise against walking out of here in the next hour. You really did a number on your dress.
He smirked and excused himself, sauntering out and closing the door behind him.
I threw an arm over my face and groaned.
Bastard. That evening, Dad wasn't there when I got home from work. Panic gripped my throat, squeezing hard. Dad never left the apartment without letting me know. His absence sobered up my Celion-induced haze quickly. I rummaged the house like he might be hiding in the cupboards, then grabbed my keys and roamed our street, shouting his name into the late spring drizzle. He couldn't have gone far. We didn't have a car anymore, and he loathed the subway. The realization that I should call someone, anyone, had settled in, but with it came the recognition that I had no one to turn to. Usually at this point, I called Milton. But Milton and I were no longer together. Our mutual friends were too busy telling me I was naive and judgmental for not giving him a second chance. Grayson and Ava were great, but I didn't know them well enough to dump my personal problems on them. And Celion? A bitter chuckle escaped my lips. I would rather die before confiding in him that I needed help. 40 minutes later, I decided to go back home to recalculate my moves. I went into our building and found Dad sleeping in the aged wood-scented stairway. His bald head was perched against the banister, drool leaking from the corner of his mouth. He looked serene and fragile, like a piece of old art. I shook him awake.
"Where have you been?"
I was shouting and shaking, and I didn't even care that I scared him. His eyes snapped open and he blinked, startled. Tears of relief began to flood down my cheeks and neck, and I knew there was no point in wiping them just to make room for more. I held on to him like an anchor, both of us sinking down to a lonely, stain-carpeted stair, and buried my head in his neck. The overwhelming notion that sometime in the near future I wouldn't be able to do this anymore squeezed my throat, suffocating me, and I heaved. My father was going to die. I was going to be left all alone in this world.
"I'm okay, Jojo. I'm fine. See? Look."
He wiggled his hairless eyebrows, tapping his chest like it was an old TV that coughed out bad signal.
"I just went to visit Mrs. Hawthorne. She was under the impression that I'd sent her flowers. Can you believe that?"
I could, because I was the one who'd left them at her door. Mrs. Hawthorne was fairly new to our building. She'd moved out of her huge Rochester place when her husband died, seeing as her kids were married and out of the house.
"Anyway,"
he chuckled,
"must have gotten tired on my way down and crashed. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to worry you."
I was torn between letting myself break down completely in front of him and keeping myself together for him. I clutched his cold cheeks and angled his head so we looked at each other. My dad was a big guy. He'd worked as a roofer in Brooklyn his entire life before cancer came barging through our door. But somehow along his journey with the disease, he'd become scrawny. So frail, in fact, that whenever he accompanied me to the supermarket, I was the one supporting him. The man who'd carried me on his shoulders until I was in first grade.
"Excuse me, little girl, did you follow me?"
he'd always said when he put me down. I always laughed. "You carried me, silly."
"Huh,"
he'd stroked his chin.
"What do you know? You're light as a feather."
I helped Dad into our apartment. No matter the weather outside, it was still sub-zero somehow. I was playing chicken with the thermostat, trying to walk the line between a sensible electricity bill and not freezing to death in this particularly chilly spring. It's like New York had decided to make life even more difficult on us. I wondered how it felt to be Celion, who probably had heated flooring in his bathroom and never had to experience any discomfort. I pondered what my boss's apartment might look like as I made Dad chicken soup, sans the chicken. We ended up watching a rerun of SNL under blankets in the living room. Some might call it a sad state of affairs for a woman in her early 20s to be hanging out with her dad on a Friday night. But there was nothing I could think of that would be better. Even though we were both silent, I drank in his presence, so acutely aware of the elephant in the room.
"Milton has been looking for you,"
he said when I got up and stretched after the show was over. My heart missed a beat.
Countless times I had wondered if I should give Milton a heads up about my father not knowing about our breakup. But since he was seeking me out so actively, I figured talking to him, no matter the capacity, would just encourage his cheating ass. Oh? I hoped it sounded like, oh, he has? And not, oh, I forgot to tell you, we broke up a month ago because he was screwing his boss while I was tending to my sick dad. But hey, now I'm screwing mine too. The circle of life, anyone?
Called me on my cell. Asked if I could tell you to get back to him. I'm sure you have by now, but I just thought you should know. Will we be seeing him this weekend?
Dad fingered his empty bowl of soup and sucked on the leftovers. He liked Milton. Every time I asked him why, he said,
because he is smart enough to love my daughter.
Hard to say, Dad. We're both very busy with work. This was tearing me apart. I hated not being honest with my father, but I hated the idea that the truth would hurt him even more. The minute my head hit my pillow, I started sobbing. Not just crying, but full-blown, so sorry for myself, bawling with tears and snot. The whole shebang. I was not a crier. I'd cried the day my mother died, and on a few occasions after that. Like the day I'd gotten my period without her there to calm me down. And after I'd stolen that wallet. But tonight, it felt like the weight of the world rested squarely on my shoulders, and I wanted to throw it away or let it bury me in the ground. The thing about crying for hours is, you always end up sleeping like the dead afterward. It happened to me the night after my mother died. The night she did, I couldn't sleep a wink, was too afraid the world would collapse if I let my eyes drift shut. Misery has a way of pulling you down and drowning you in it. It's sweet and suffocating, like a lullaby, soothing you to sleep. That night, I slept like a baby.
Chapter 4. Celion. Living alone was a choice I made rather happily. The alternative was living a lie, and I didn't do lies nor theft. Not since both things had exploded in my face in spectacular fashion. Even though I had a car, I took the subway to work every morning, and since everyone in my family for the last 3 generations had personal drivers, I was seen as the black sheep of the tribe. Luckily, the tribe had dwindled and was nearly non-existent, so it's not like I had anyone to impress. Besides, I liked the smell of piss and the general misery of harsh city life. It reminded me that I was a lucky motherfucker, even on the days I felt like God, if he existed, had made a point of pissing all over my plans. On my way to work, I thought about what had driven me to pull Judith into the power room on Friday and fuck her mouth into what could have been a mass power outage in one of the largest skyscrapers in New York. My jizz definitely shouldn't have been anywhere near all those electrical switches. I was definitely trying to piss all over my territory, but in the process, I'd also pissed over my no-repeats rule, as well as my professional relationship with her. Currently, I was trying to decide if I should go back to normal and act like she didn't exist until she quit, and the problem took care of itself, or figure the damage had already been done and make her a booty call for when I was too tired to go on the prowl. Pros: the Manhattan singles scene was beginning to grate on my nerves. I was starting to see the same faces in the same clubs. Every hookup and Tinder profile blended together in my head. At least with Judith, I had sexual chemistry. Cons: her pussy aside, she had an annoying, holier-than-thou attitude, not to mention she was mouthy, and I really couldn't fucking stand her. When I got to the office building, I had to take a phone call. Lily. I normally sent her straight to voicemail, but this was the third time she'd called since I'd gotten off the subway, so I wanted to make sure Madeline, her grandmother, was okay. Anyone dead? These were my exact words when I took the call. I didn't go into the building knowing things could get pretty crappy and fast when it came to Lily and me. I rarely raised my voice, but for her I was always happy to make an exception. What? Her default voice was whining, the kind that sounds like a fork scraping against a plate.
No, Graham's just doing great. I was just wondering if...
No need to wonder. The answer is no.
Celion, wait, I...
But I'd already hung up. I turned around to walk through the double glass doors and spotted Judith sitting on the top stair reading, soaking in the first rays of sun like a thirsty flower. She wore one of her crumpled, wannabe grown-up black suits and hugged her backpack. Her chucks were red today. Oh, boy. She wiped her eyes quickly, but I wasn't sure whether she was crying or about to. She was talking on the phone, and any other bastard would have turned around, walked away, and vowed to stop making her life more difficult. But I was programmed differently, carved from stone like the very people who